Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
It may seem like an eternity away, but with restrictions beginning to ease and discussions heating up around vaccine passports, can we dare to dream about city breaks again? Well, we're going to do it right now because I'm joined by travel writer Rosalind Dee and by a man who through his work has visited many European cities, RTE soccer correspondent George Hamilton, to discuss their own favourite cities in Europe and a few hidden gems. And you're both very welcome. Now, George, I'm going to start with you because I want to know if in the morning you could hop on a plane and visit any European city you wanted to, where would you go?
I'd head for Munich. The reason I'd head for Munich is that having lived in Germany for a time and got to know a lot about the country, Munich, it strikes me, is the perfect compromise between German efficiency and Italian joie de vivre. They often refer to Munich as the most northerly Italian city, and it is a bit like that. It's just a wonderful place to go. I first visited in 1971 when they were digging the place up to get ready for the Olympic Games of 72. I've been back many times since to what has now become the most magnificent pedestrian area, which you start at the western end at Karlsplatz, which the locals don't call Karlsplatz because it was named after a very unpopular elector. Instead, they call it Stachus, which was the name of a local pub, and it was knocked down for the creation of the Karlsplatz. So you go into Munich and you ask for Karlsplatz, they look at you and they say, no, you mean Stachus. Walk from there down the pedestrian street past the largest Renaissance church north of the Alps, where I saw Juventus football fans go in for some devotions on the afternoon of a game. And you'll eventually arrive through the Kaufingerstrasse in Marienplatz, past the onion domes of the Frauenkirche, and look up at the Glockenspiel on the Neues Rathaus as the Bavarian knight takes on an invader and wins every time, on the hour, every hour.
Oh gosh, I'm there, George. Rosalind, your first choice then.
Sorry, Claire?
Your first choice, if
well,
you could go in the morning.
I'm not going to talk about Venice today because everybody's sick listening to me talking about Venice because it's a city I've known for 25 years. But if I had to pick a place that is a kind of a, I feel, a bit of a hidden gem, and a place I've only discovered recently and would really love to go back to, it would also be Italy, and it would be Genoa, or Genova, as the Italians call it. Now, no direct flights from here to there is the one downside, but you can fly into Milan. It's only an hour and a half by train from Milan. Milano Centrale train station in itself is just astonishing to see. But Genoa is, Genoa is one of those cities. It's the largest port in Italy. So it's not, it's not picture postcard beautiful. But I quite like that. It has that sense. It's a bit rough around the edges, Claire.
Yeah,
and
just give us a sense of the location, why you feel it's so special.
Well, I love it. It's on the coast, of course. So it's there. You're on the Ligurian coastline. Not particularly touristy part. Christopher Columbus came from there. So obviously the whole port aspect dominates the city. But it also has these amazing, they call them the Rolli Palaces. Now, Rolli largely just means list. It's a list. So it's a city that boasts these extraordinary 16th and century, 17th century palaces. I mean, nowadays there's 163 of them dotted across two or three streets. They are largely now, some are still private residences, most of them are galleries or museums, and some are offices. But within that 163, Claire, there are 42 of them which have been designated as the Rolli Palaces, and they, as a kind of collective, are a World Heritage Site. And they're just beautiful. I mean, there's the Palazzo Bianco with its amazing art collection, the Palazzo Rossi where there's a Caravaggio, and the trick with the Palazzo Rossi, Rosso, because I saw Genoa. I spent a morning with the most amazing young man who was my guide. I've never recommended somebody, in print or on the air before, but if anybody goes to Genoa, it's worth a few bob to get hold of Andrea Azzinari for a few hours to walk you around the city.
We're all writing that name down.
So he told me when you go to Palazzo Rosso, he said, we need to rush. I said, why do we need to rush? He said, because it's starting to rain, and when the rain comes down, it's slippy on the roof and they close it off to tourists. So let's get there fast. And the views from the roof of the Palazzo Rosso are astonishing.
The insider knowledge. Now, George, you're not a fan of Genoa, but you only passed through, is that right? You weren't there for long.
I spent a Monday afternoon in Genoa once back in 1990, the 25th of June. 1990. Who could forget it? It was the day of that awful match between Ireland and Romania that ended in euphoria. A scoreless draw after 120 minutes and then the penalty shootout and the nation held its breath and all the rest of it.
Yes.
But that's the only time I was there. My memory is of bringing a bottle of sparkling wine, Asti Spumanti, into the stadium against all the rules. It had travelled with Tom Flanagan, my wingman, and myself down from Milan that morning. It was a very hot day. It spent the morning in the boot of the car. It spent the afternoon under our seat in the stand. And then when it came the moment to actually crack it open, and we'd done well to smuggle it into the interview room after the game, David O'Leary and Paddy Bonner, the two heroes of the hour, were proffered glasses of this sparkling wine that by now had turned to something like sparkling vinegar. One mouthful, live on TV, and then over my head,
right.
Live on TV.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
That's
I
my
wouldn't,
Genoa.
I wouldn't blame them. I wouldn't blame them. You're both big fans of Madrid, and Roslyn, that was the last trip you went on. It was a day trip.
Yeah, it was January 2020. Remember that, Claire? Remember
yes.
Way back then? My son, my adult son, I took him as a surprise a week after his birthday. So we went for the day. So we went out on a crack of dawn flight and we were home again by midnight. And we had a ball. I know Madrid quite well. I visited it many times with my late husband. I much prefer it to Barcelona. Much, much prefer it to Barcelona. But yeah, we
and did a day trip give you enough time to do what
great.
You needed to do?
I had it quite well sort of scheduled. So we were there. I think we were actually sitting down in the famous chocolateria in Madrid called San Ginés, where they all go for their breakfast after their nights out, and they have chocolate, thick chocolate drink and the churros, they dip the churros in. I mean, it's heart attack time, you know. But so we were there in time for that, and we did the open top bus tour, which I always recommend. Actually, pretty much in most cities, if you go somewhere for the first time, it gives you a great kind of perspective, you know. Mm-hmm. And what I would often do is do it once, stay on board the whole way, and then go again and get off and on to see the sights. So we did that. The Retiro Park in Madrid is really beautiful. Massive park, right smack bang in the heart of the city. Big boating lake, lovely place to walk. And if you're there, if you're in Madrid, we weren't there on a Sunday, so we didn't see the Rastro, which is the famous flea market in Madrid every Sunday. It's enormous. It takes over streets and streets and streets. But we did all the sights. We had tapas in my favourite tapas place, which is Casa del Abuelo, real spit and sawdust, very near Puerto del Sol, so again, very central. You have to like prawns, that's all they do, but they do it in various forms. You have to like either red or white wine, but that's it. There's no choice
also
within the red
fine.
Or white. And we did the, George will know more about this than me, but we did the tour of the Bernabeu, the Real Madrid Stadium. I mean, I am into football. My son loved it. We didn't do an actual, you know, escorted tour. We paid in and we did our own thing. So we spent a long time there. It's really brilliant. And my son, who for his sins is a Man United fan, felt that actually the dressing rooms, all those areas were actually superior
mm-hmm.
to
right.
Old Trafford.
Ah.
But there's a few wee hidden gems as well there. I mean, you don't often think of going to visit a station when you go to a city, but the Estación de Atocha, it's amazing. It has this giant tropical garden inside. Mm-hmm. So you walk in and you feel the heat. There's the huge plants. There's colonies of turtles. It's just extraordinary. And all within walking distance. And, of course, there's the art. I mean, there's the Prado. There's all of that.
And so, George, what is it about Madrid that you like?
I was just, I'm back there listening to Roslyn describe it. It's just a magnificent city. It has just everything that you could possibly want. I was just going to talk about the walk which we did from the Real Madrid Stadium, which is to the north of the city, down the Paseo de la Castellana, yeah. And into a restaurant in the centre of that wide dual carriageway, which has got a lovely promenade up the middle of it.
And yes.
It's a conservatory restaurant called El Espejo, which is the Spanish for mirror. And I recall having walked down from the stadium, working up an appetite for lunch, because that's what we would do. The game isn't until quarter to 9 or 9 o'clock at night, local time. So you've time, you won't have dinner, but you'll have a nice lunch. And I found this place, and it was a December afternoon, and the sun was splitting the stones. And I sat down outside, but of course I overlooked the fact that before I'd reached the coffee, the sun would have dipped behind the buildings. Madrid is many thousands of feet up in the air, and the sky was clear. A December afternoon, I was frozen.
Freezing. Well, we'll all have to get used to that now with our outdoor summer that we're going to have.
Indeed.
Can we move to Zurich now? We didn't have a mention of Zurich, did we? Yes, Rosin, that's...
Yeah, no, I mean, I visited Zurich for the first time probably about 4 years ago now. And to be honest, Claire, I went for the James Joyce connection. I'd always had this thing I wanted to... Not that I'm any James Joyce expert or anything like that, but I love the Dead. I've read Ulysses, but I love his short story, The Dead.
Mm. And this is where he's at rest.
He's at rest there. And I went for the James Joyce connection, but actually I loved the city. It wasn't what I was expecting. I thought it would be very high-rise banking territory, you know, that kind of look. But its medieval heart is beautiful. The little cobbled streets, the little cafes, I really loved it. No, I did. And the other amazing thing is they love James Joyce in Zurich. I mean, everybody knows about him. The first morning in my hotel, when the waitress realised I was from Ireland, she actually said to me, "Oh, we love your Mr. Joyce in Zurich." Mm-hmm. The taxi driver. Anyway, I did. I stood at the grave, beautiful, Fluntern Cemetery, high above the city. And then I also ate in, if you really want to do the James Joyce vibe bit, the Kronenhalle restaurant, right in the centre of the city, not far from the lake, which is where James Joyce and Nora used to eat, and where Hilda Zumsteg, who was the owner, was incredibly good to them and didn't charge them very often. And there's actually a table there that they acknowledge as James Joyce's table, where he used to eat. In fact, he wrote part of Ulysses there.
Well, we might have a point of difference on this, because, Georgie, I know you describe Zurich as being very clean and efficient and very Swiss. What's the subtext there? Did you not like it?
Oh, no, I liked it. I liked it fine. I mean, I was there many times. I used to cover an athletics meeting called the Weltklasse, so I'd get a couple of nights in Zurich in the summer, and it was beautiful. And you'll have gathered, I enjoy walking around cities. That stroll down the Bahnhofstrasse from the station to the lake.
The most expensive shopping street in the world, one of the most expensive in the world, George.
Yeah, well, I never spent anything there.
Nor did I.
Such an Elizabeth like that. But I do feel, it is a lovely city, and Rosin is spot on when she says it's not like you expect it to be. And it is medieval. Switzerland was untouched largely by what went on elsewhere in Europe. So there is a wonderful history in Zurich, and they're very good at preserving it. But it's just, it's not that I don't like it, it's just that it wouldn't be top of my list, because I don't think there's as much fun and excitement about Zurich, about being in a big city, as there would be in other places. That's all.
It's got that grim fairy tale vibe about it, though, hasn't it? In the old
it
city,
does.
It's very atmospheric.
You know, when you talk about, you know, ranking not being the top of your list and so on, what would be at the bottom of your list? The places where you're not keen to go back to, Rosalind. Is there anything there that languishes around number 10?
I don't like Barcelona.
Barcelona.
No.
Okay.
I know half the world flocks to Barcelona,
but it's not for you.
I only went once. Didn't like it. Thought it tried too hard. I know it sounds silly maybe to say, kind of tries too hard to be cool. You know, like, get over yourself.
And George, what about you?
Manchester.
You'll be in right trouble for that.
I come from Belfast, and Belfast grew up in the Victorian era around heavy industry, and I'm not really a big fan of that. I like Belfast, of course, because I come from there, but I'm not really a big fan of that kind of city. And as a former colleague, Brian Walker, once said to me when he moved from Belfast to Manchester, and I bumped into him on the street in Manchester one afternoon, I said to him in the course of our conversation, "Have you settled here?" And he said, "Not at all." He said, "You can only give your allegiance to one small provincial town."
Yeah, and you've already done that, so you're...
I've already done that, and so would he.
All right, well, look, thank you so much. Thank you both for taking us on that virtual trip, and we can't wait until we can make some of those trips for real. Rosalind Dee and George Hamilton. Coming up, some cooking hacks with Agnes Boucher-Hayes.
Today with Claiborne. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player app.